ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Welcome everybody to another episode of Dr. Matt and Dr. Mike's A to Z of the Human Body. We are on the letter A and the topic is all or nothing. Wow, how beautiful. Wow. So there we go. All or Nothing. Matthew, thank you for that. So that was Matt's rendition of All or Nothing by who?
O-Town.
O-Town. Never heard of them. So
you have heard the song, right?
Yeah. I think a lot of people would have heard that song and forgotten that song as well. So O-Town, I wonder what you're doing. Not as popular as Crazy Town, who sang Butterfly, but then again, I think people have forgotten about them as well.
Yeah.
All or Nothing. This seems like a weird topic. I mean, particularly within biology, what are we referring to by all or nothing?
So I guess you would say this is a law or a principle that refers to excitable tissue. So this would be muscular tissue or nervous tissue.
Or endocrine.
I guess.
Yeah, I always call it because when you think about beta cells of the pancreas, you need changes in the electrical chemical gradient for insulin to be released. Okay. So I always call endocrine tissue excitable.
Do they? Okay. But in terms of this principle applied to endocrine tissue, I'm not sure.
Well, I'd say, anyway, I don't know because I haven't heard your topic.
Okay.
So
in physiology, the all or none law or all or none principle or all or nothing law refers to, it was first established by, I guess, a cardiologist or a researcher looking at cardiac muscle.
So you didn't bother looking into that.
This was 1871 by Henry Bowditch.
Bowditch.
Oh. And so he was doing electrical stimulation of heart muscles.
All right. And what did he find?
So what he stated was an induction shock produces a contraction or fails to do so according to its strengths.
Right.
So if it does so at all, it produces the greatest contraction that can be produced by any strength of stimulus in the condition of the muscle at the time.
Interesting. So he's basically, okay, can I interpret that? And you tell me if I'm right or wrong. He's saying that when you stimulate a muscle, for example, like a cardiac muscle, that even if you start with a very low voltage and you go up and up and up, it's not like the lower voltage results in a small amount of contraction.
Yes, that's right.
And then the higher voltage is a stronger contraction. He says nothing happens until you hit one particular voltage and then you get a contraction which is going to be as strong as it ever will be.
That's correct. Correct.
Now, is that actually correct though?
It is correct.
Even with skeletal muscle?
Well, this is cardiac muscle. So cardiac muscle is a bit different in the sense that it works at a syncytion.
Ooh, I think you said too many S's, but yes, syncytion.
So it works as a whole unit, right?
Yes.
Whereas
can we define syncytion where multiple cells act as though it's one cell?
Yeah, so they're kind of all connected together by tight junctions with communications between them, right? So they're held together by desmosomes or something.
Yep.
And
pop rivets.
Pop like rivets or Velcro. And they have communications between each cell.
Yep.
So they allow, I guess in this case, a depolarization wave to go through the whole lot of them.
Yeah, whatever happens to one cell will spread to the next and the next and the next.
So, you could do it at the heart, and this is probably why it was first discovered, much easier on the heart because you could just do it in one area and the whole heart will go. Whereas in a skeletal muscle, to follow this principle, you have to do it in just one fiber, which is one cell.
Which is
difficult.
Which can be tiny depending on the skeletal muscle.
Yeah, and so it might be long, but it's very thin, the skeletal muscle.
You've heard that before, yeah.
So this is why in 1870 it was thought, and probably years after, that it was only pertaining to cardiac muscle.
Right.
But it has been shown that it is also, and it's probably more commonly used, this principle, in neurophysiology.
So for neurons as well.
Neurons as well. But so it has to be single. But it has to be single neurons. So a single axon.
Okay.
And a lot of the, well, I shouldn't say the lot, all of it, but, you know, a lot of neurophysiology in the early days were done in animals.
Yep.
And one particular model was the giant squid.
Right.
And I think it was it was done in a particular part of America where the squid was abundant in that region.
Okay.
But the uniqueness of this giant squid was it had a humongous single axon neuron.
Where's it from? Where to where?
Well, I guess it's primitive nervous system.
Yeah.
To the part of the squid that contracts to propel it through the water.
Oh.
Now, the size of it was ballpark 1 millimeter in cross section. So,
as in the size of that axon.
That's right.
That's big.
That's huge.
That's a single neuron axon.
Right. Yeah.
Not a nerve bundle. Fiber.
So when I do my neurophysiology in usually mice or rats, the sciatic nerve, which is the largest peripheral nerve in the body, in mice is 1 millimeter.
But that's not a single axon.
That's right. It could be 50,000.
Right. That's enormous.
So that one,
yeah.
And then that's how they would have shown it, possibly in that one or maybe the C. elegans, which is a type of worm, where they stimulated that single axon and, like you said, they could grade it, so they just increase the intensity, nothing happens, increase a bit more, nothing happens, increase a bit more, and then all of a sudden an action potential happens or a stimulus or an impulse goes down the axon. And it doesn't matter how much more you stimulate it, it will still occur at the same intensity.
Right. So
voltage.
Okay. My question now is, why would we evolve to have excitable tissue be all or nothing? Why would we not want nuance? Why would we not want it to be graded in which a smaller impulse results in a smaller outcome and a bigger impulse results in a larger outcome, whether that be contraction or hormone release or whatever?
Yeah, look, I don't know 100% the answer, but I will guess from first principles. So when you look at a neuron, it has two ends to it.
Yep.
It has an end closer to the cell body, which has the dendrites, like a big tree, and then at the other end, it has the terminal, which usually in a neuron, at the terminal end is where it releases its neurotransmitter to either go to an effector organ or onto another neuron. But if you look at the other end, which is the dendrites, it has multiple incoming signals from other nerves or other stimulating sense organs, right?
Yep.
And these can do graded potentials onto it, so they become summative. And so you could have things that are exciting or inhibiting, and it's kind of like the collection of all those. The cell body does this kind of computing, adds it all up, and then it goes, well, we've reached the point where we think we should send this stimulus now.
Yep.
And this is like the threshold, and we'll send it.
Right. I think that makes sense.
It gives it the ability to actually get a lot of computing power, I guess.
Yes, because it can't send both an excitatory and inhibitory signal at the same time.
Right.
And if it was fully graded in that sense, it would have to.
Mm.
So I think, I think that makes total sense.
Which then just gives the neuron a huge amount of more computing power. And then if you add that in terms of just number, you're now, once you're working in the brain level, 100 billion of them with, you know, somewhere, let's say 10,000 different dendritic connections, that gives you a huge amount of complexity.
Mm, absolutely.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
All right, so all or nothing, that makes sense now. What else is relevant for somebody to know about the all or nothing principle?
Well, a couple of things that are just important is what determines the stimulus, what determines whether it will go to all or nothing is a couple of things. You need to have the threshold potential, so that's the point where it will generate an action potential.
Yep.
But also you need to think about what is the potential at rest? So what's the rest in membrane potential? So what is it like without the nerve being stimulated or the muscle being stimulated?
So do you think before somebody listens to this episode, they should listen to the action potential episode to get a good understanding of ion movement?
Yep.
But to summarize very simply and succinctly, like a syncytium, if you have any excitable tissue, whether it be muscle or nervous or endocrine, there is going to be a charge difference across the membrane. And this is
from
not
the inside versus the outside.
Yes. So this is not across the entire cell. This is just across the membrane, right? And so the inside tends to be negative compared to the outside. Now, the thing is, the inside isn't negative. It's just negative compared to the outside.
Yeah.
And so what you find is that both are positive. It's just the external membrane is slightly more positive than the internal. But if you compare the voltage difference, you find the internal has less positive ions inside compared to outside. And generally this is for two reasons, right? The first is the sodium-potassium ATPase pump, which will throw three positive sodium out and two positive potassium in. So three positive things out, two positive things in, hence why more positive outside. I think for most excitable tissues, this contributes to like a difference of negative 5 millivolts. But the most influencing factor here is the leaky potassium channels. And because potassium mostly sits inside, if its door is slightly open, it's going to leak out, carrying the positive charge with it, making the inside significantly more negative compared to the outside.
That's right.
Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
So you're happy with that?
Because potassium is following its gradient, which is still, it wants to go out of the cell, but the electrostatic charge difference kind of pulls it back in.
Yeah.
And so it has this constant in and out effect, but essentially because the cell membrane is, I think, 90% permeable to potassium compared to the other ions, that's why potassium plays the biggest role in the change in charge.
And the reason why this is important is because once both the sodium potassium ATPase pump has done its thing and the leaky potassium channels has done its thing, we've now set up both an electrical and a chemical gradient.
Yes.
Right? Where most sodium's outside, most potassium's inside, even with the leaky channels, most potassium is still inside, but it's mostly positive outside and mostly negative inside. So what we've now got is this electrical chemical gradient means that two things can happen. Is that the movement of sodium and potassium can occur and the movement of ions And the movement of electrical things can occur. And they're linked together. That's the thing, is that ions are charged chemicals. So when a chemical moves, a charge will move with it. And so this allows for something to happen. If you've got this set up at rest where there's an electrical chemical difference, it now has the capacity to change. And it's that change which makes it excitable, right?
Yeah. And it's important to note, that it's a dynamic system. So it's a lot of the textbooks we read, it will say the rest membrane potential is exactly negative 70 or
right.
even more in a cardiac
muscle. Yeah, like
muscle.
Negative 90.
But it's not like that. It's right. this kind of waveform that just constantly goes up and down, up and down, up and down.
So yeah, I suppose the cell's never at rest.
No, because there's things that are flux. It's yes. always changing dynamically.
Yes.
And so even though we have these set numbers, it's not always, you know, you'll hear the threshold is negative 55 millivolts and you'll hear the rest membrane potential is negative 70, but it's not held like that. It's constantly changing.
Now that threshold's really important, right? Because it's the threshold that's the reason why it's all or nothing.
Yeah.
Is the threshold is a particular charge that is a key to open the gate to the sodium ions. Because if you open sodium gates, you get this huge flux of positive sodium into the cell, making the inside negative to positive.
Yeah.
And it's that change that will stimulate something to happen inside that cell.
Yeah.
If it's a muscle, it will stimulate it to contract. Well, ultimately will stimulate to contract.
Downstream.
If it's endocrine tissue, it's going to stimulate it to release a hormone or a chemical. And so that gate, as soon as it hits that, for example, negative 55, then that's the key to open sodium gates. And that's the all or nothing, right?
Yep.
If it wasn't all or nothing, any sodium influx would trigger some degree of functional outcome for the excitable tissue. Yep. But it doesn't.
Yep.
All right.
And then going to some clinical relevance.
Yeah.
This threshold can change.
Right.
So
right, that's true.
An example would be temperature. So if you were exposing an individual to higher temperatures, the threshold and the resting potential will change.
Yep.
And this can lead to a more excitable state.
Yep.
In this case, the neuron. And so a classic example in children. These are called febrile seizures or seizures that are due to temperature or fever.
Yeah.
And so changing the temperature of the individual changes the way that these gates are opening and closing.
Yeah.
But also the ability of the ions to shift across the membrane.
Yeah.
And so that is making the cell, in this case the neuron, more excitable, therefore more likely to be stimulated. And in the case of the brain, so the motor cortex, can then start to generate involuntary movement, and that's the seizures.
Firing off when it shouldn't.
That's right.
Simply because the threshold has changed.
And so higher temperature can make it more excitable. Colder temperature does the opposite.
Mm.
So it makes it harder for a nerve to fire.
Like a snake.
Well, yeah, I guess so.
Like being cold-blooded.
Well, that's probably enzymes, but I'm sure there's a degree of that.
Yeah.
And so how would you clinically manage that besides cooling them down or giving them maybe anti-febrile medication?
Yeah.
Well, you can give some medications that open gates for negative things to go in, like chloride ions.
Right, like GABA.
So if you do that, like the benzodiazepines, that would then cause chlorides to go in and then the rest membrane potential goes down further.
Makes
harder
the inside
to
more negative.
Yeah, harder to stimulate.
Perfect. And that's all or nothing.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.